I met with Shalome Lloyd in July 2021 when she featured in both our Diverse Founders and Venture Capitalist series, as well as our Nigerian Voices series. Her story of leaving Nigeria to study pharmacy in Russia at the age of 16 is a fascinating one, and she channeled her love of science into a career in the pharmaceutical industry. In 2021, we discussed this trajectory.
Well, let's start by talking about your background, because this really is a fascinating one. Where were you born and how did you come to study pharmacy in Russia at the age of 16?
I was born in Nigeria. So I'm proudly British Nigerian. I was born in Nigeria and did my primary and secondary education back in Nigeria. And my family, my father had gotten a scholarship actually to study here in the UK through the Commonwealth. And my brothers, I've got four brothers who are here in the UK. And I think I was kept closer to home, being the only daughter and all that. But I was a bit of a nerd growing up, and my sciences were all that I knew. I'm one of those annoying people who kind of believes that nothing is impossible. So for me, it was really my sciences were all I knew. I got into university in Nigeria, actually, at the age of 15 to study industrial microbiology. But there was an opportunity to either go to Brighton to study pharmacy here in the UK or a scholarship to go to the former Soviet Union in the 80s. And I chose that one. I suppose I was running away. Maybe, I don't know. But it was incredible to, at the age of 16, find myself on a plane to the former Soviet Union, USSR as it was at the time. And yeah, I think my life actually began on that flight.
Well, I think we talked about, I actually also spent time in Russia, not at the age of 16, a little bit later, but maybe around the same time you were there. I can imagine that was quite a culture shock that you experienced there. And what was it like and what kind of life lessons did that instill in you?
Oh my goodness. Yes, it was indeed a culture shock because you go to, I studied in a country where I arrived without knowing a single word of Russian or knowing anyone. But it was an adventure, and I was lucky to be raised in a family where it was always full of adventure. People who are old enough to remember having pen pals, we used to have pen pals in Germany, and we used to go and visit them and spend months and months there. So I was used to kind of getting outside my comfort zone, but being in Russia was very, very different. Being a Black woman in Russia was absolutely crazy. But I returned to the UK with a BSc and MSc in pharmacy, in addition to a language. And there were many challenges being a woman of color in Russia. However, my experience in the former Soviet Union not only nurtured the scientist in me, but gave me confidence, determination, tenacity, the will to succeed, and the ability to adapt, and the understanding, most important, that my success or my failure was down to me and only me.
That's an amazing story. I'm still quite shocked at you entering, being able to enter university at the age of 15, quite a prodigious talent, even very early on. This kicked off a love for the pharmaceutical industry in you, and you spent over 20 years there. Tell us what it is you love about the pharmaceutical industry.
Gosh, when I came back to the UK from Russia, I started my career in the pharmaceutical industry, an industry I have loved and still love for over 25 years now. I'm building a career in pharmaceutical drug development. Enabled me to work from the ground up into leadership roles where I led teams locally, globally, across six countries, managed budgets, led innovation projects and strategic focus areas. It's been my life, really, and the attraction really is having a hand in making miracle medicines available to people who need it. It's really that simple for me.
From there, she became a serial entrepreneur, including the founding of EMQT, Emerging Market Quality Trials. We talked about the origins of that enterprise.
What factors led you to launch that?
Everything I do in my life, it's all about impact, has been a personal journey, really, has been about impact and purpose. And, you know, we throw this word innovation about everywhere. Innovation happens when we change our mindset, when we see opportunities in everything we do on a daily basis, right? We live in a world where I see the perfect mix between science, technology, and nature, colliding with innovation as the catalyst. My father, who passed away and was buried last year, had cancer. And I've worked in the pharmaceutical industry for nearly 25 years. And I truly believe that perhaps if we had a trial that was ongoing in his area, it could have helped somehow. You'd never know. But I've seen the miracle of medicines and what it does through clinical trials. And that was what led to emerging market quality trials. In fact, it was what my passion for this was from that, again, purpose, impact, a personal journey. Patients of African descent make up about 17% of the world's population, of over a billion. But Black people are generally underrepresented in the clinical trials globally, less than 3%. So I'll give you an example. Currently, 95% of cancer patients in sub-Saharan Africa are diagnosed way too late. These are a population of people that offer, you know, drug-naive patients across multiple therapeutic areas. And let's put Africa into context. I think they said, I'm trying to get the data now, between 2013 and 2020 last year, emerging market economies were forecasted to grow 3 times faster than developed countries. The population in Africa is immense. It adds about 3.5 million more people per month into the world. So Africa is huge. It's a huge opportunity. But you have people there who are dying, people who don't have access to medicines. So why can't we utilize healthcare experts and technology innovation to provide access to patients and high quality data that the pharmaceutical industry wants, but also provide these patients with medicine? So that's where EMQT is going. It's really the bridge between the pharma industry and Africa.
And where is it currently operating and what are your plans?
Wow, EMQT is a UK-based company based here in Milton Keynes. And we have been proudly running projects in various African countries, Congo, Gabon, Tanzania, Nigeria as well. And training and education, capability and capacity building is at the core of everything that we do. Evaluation of centers of excellence, making sure that people are trained, ICH GCP standards. And some of these facilities are incredible because you have medics, researchers, doctors in diaspora who are going back to their home countries, who were trained in the Western world. So the capability is there, the expertise is there, the patients are there. There's just a few tweaks we need to make to actually attract pharmaceutical companies to run clinical trials in Africa and make these medicines available to patients.
I met with Shalom again in January of 2023 and asked her what kind of year she had had in EMQT.
Yes, EMQT has been going from strength to strength and living up to its name, Emerging Market Quality Trials. 2022 was really, I guess, that year that we felt or started to feel that we're truly breaking barriers, that people were becoming more and more aware of the benefits of diversity and inclusion in drug development in clinical trials. You get used to knocking on a door for so long, and you get a bit shocked when somebody answers your call or opens the door ever so slightly. So I see 2022 as that year where the doors are starting to open, more awareness, I guess more demand even, and people wanting to understand and to know. And a really important piece is also from an EMQT perspective, 2022 was that year that we as an organization started to see things from our potential customer's perspective. And what I mean by that is understanding, well, this is a no-brainer, including African patients in clinical trials. Why aren't you doing it? And we kept badgering people, why aren't you doing it? I think 2022 made us stop, understand, well, let's see it from their point of view. What are the barriers? And approaching it that way was a eureka moment for us in 2022. So every single day we're expanding, and that expansion is not like, oh, it'll be nice to work in this particular country. It's where is the work taking us and where do we feel that a particular development project will be best suited and which country will it be best placed in? So, for example, if you're talking about oncology, where do we have the most disease prevalence in a particular country? That's where we're going to go. And in terms of patient numbers, it's interesting. We've been focused so much on communicable diseases in Africa, but we're realizing is that non-communicable diseases, the prevalence are crazy because of the population size. So even if you have 2% of a population in Nigeria, for example, with breast cancer, the population of the country is 220 million. So the sample size you're talking about is still a huge number of patients. So the numbers that we're dealing with are huge. Disease areas that we're dealing with are moving away from communicable to non-communicable. When you talk about Africa, people are used to infectious diseases, HIV, etc. But now we're looking at actually look at disease areas such as oncology research, cancer, cardiovascular disease, a sickle cell. So it's actually opening up to say these are things we'll be talking about mainstream and not focus on, oh, Africa is all about malaria. Those are important, but those are areas that Africa is known for. So much research has gone on in those areas. So it's about, again, diversifying therapeutic areas in that way as well. So it's been a very exciting year, 2022 it was.
Absolutely fascinating. Clearly a sign of the maturing of this concept of the clinical trials now that it's moved beyond communicable diseases.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What would you say were some of the highlights of the past few years? And did COVID and its aftermath lead to a kind of increase in interest maybe in this area, given the need, as you mentioned, for trials, given the fascination with Africa's experience of COVID?
COVID certainly helped. I think some of the highlights in the past couple of years was the increase of interest, that feeling that, oh, we're doing something right because there's now interest. Whereas we had to go and knock on doors, we found that people are starting to come to us. Is it feasible to run this kind of project? Is it feasible to do this? Can we do that? And really pleased that people are actually including us in, oh, we want to start or formulate an Africa strategy for clinical trials and drug development. So getting us quite involved early. Those are some of the highlights, certainly for me personally. And I think I mentioned it before, trying to look at things through the eyes of pharma companies and understanding their why, the barriers are stopping them from taking this leap. And the main thing we found was just fear of the unknown. Are the doctors, healthcare professionals, are they trained? Do they have the skill set? We're afraid that if they don't, then surely they can't run quality clinical trials. Is there infrastructure to run these trials? These are really valid questions. So we realized that what we had to do was address these fears that pharma companies had. And we've had huge highlight for me is us developing two innovative tools to help address these fears. One is something we call the assessment tool for overseas markets, ATOM. ATOM is that tool that we're able to collate information about different centers of excellence in Africa, different hospitals, their capabilities, what equipment they have, are their staff trained? So we already have all this information we're collecting on a day-to-day basis. And what it also helps us do is identify, so let's say a center of excellence in Gabon, they have all this experience, but they have a knowledge gap. So we will then help to plug that knowledge gap through our second innovative tool called Insight. It's a knowledge management platform. So ATOM helps us identify what these centers of excellence have. Insight helps us plug any knowledge gaps that we identify, be it training on ICHGCP, training on drug development, training on different aspects, and also training for pharmaceutical companies as well, in terms of working in Africa, what the do's and don'ts, what can they expect? So when we started to look at this in that way, say, what are these people afraid of? Okay, now we know what they're afraid of. Now we develop something that will help us actually tackle that fear and give them more reassurance and more confidence. The knock-on effect of that is we're seeing more people ask questions, more people come through, more people be open to actually running clinical trials in Africa.
That's really fascinating. And of course, through Naturally Tribal, you have an on-the-ground experience of some of the maybe the kinks about doing business in Africa, maybe some of the logistical challenges, but equally how some things can move far more quickly than you might expect through the tech advances. In terms of clinical trials, have you seen that too, that some areas are very fast to market or in terms of, you know, can be done, executed quite quickly, but other times they get maybe perhaps clogged up in a bottleneck?
Absolutely. And the great thing about Africa, VUCA, Africa is volatile, it's uncertain, it's complex, it's ambiguous, right? However, it's also the virgin ground for innovation. Technology moves really fast. Whereas if you were going to introduce new technology in the Western world, we're set in our sort of ways in a way. It's quite hard to implement. Whereas in Africa, you're doing things from scratch. People are keen, people are interested. So you find that it's actually fast moving. Everybody, pretty much everyone has a mobile phone. So you're finding that technology is really, really embraced and things are actually fast moving. I was surprised about this, but a lot of people weren't. But I guess I was a little bit naive, but pleasantly surprised that technology-enabled innovation is something that Africa has almost been always ready for. And we're seeing it benefit us in the world of clinical research.
Really fascinating. And I know it's probably hard to name any one thing that is exciting for you about this area for 2023, but maybe is there one particular thing that you're looking forward to or that you're most excited about?
You know what? I guess it's going to be hard for me to say one single thing. I think everywhere you go now, you hear about EDI, equality, diversity, and inclusion. I think in this area, including African patients as standard in global clinical trials, there's no example like it. And the fact that we're starting to do it, I think it's just absolutely incredible and a true, genuine, amazing, fascinating example of how diversity and inclusion benefits us all.
Well, that's a great segue to my last kind of roundup question, which is just reminding our listeners that when we first spoke, we were speaking to you as an entrepreneur, and we spoke about some of the challenges as a Black woman, as an entrepreneur, and in your career throughout this diversity of experiences that you've had. Now, because this series is specifically focused on medicine and science, we look at the concept of, say, missing people in medicine from a training standpoint. Equally, we feature Chidobere Ibe, who's done some fantastic illustrations, very much normalizing Black figures and other figures in medical textbooks. What would you say you've seen in terms of diversity and inclusion within this healthcare and science arena in particular? Where are the gaps and where is improvement being made?
I think for me, the biggest gap, particularly in drug development, is that we do have healthcare professionals. We do have Black people who have talent. You find that a lot of people, Africans who've been trained in the Western world and are coming home, bringing their skills back home. But I think the missing piece for me is the fact that we're not bringing these people to the fore. Basically, what you're doing with this whole series, they are there, they exist. There's so many of us talented in the medical research profession, just actually heads down doing our own thing. But it's just actually seeing my role as bringing these talented people to the fore. Because I need to do that. Because, you know, like I mentioned, the pharma industry is the fear. Part of the fear is the talent there? Are there healthcare professionals who can run these trials? They are there. And my job is to bring these people to the fore to say, absolutely, they're incredible researchers, healthcare professionals across any therapeutic or disease area you're looking for. There are talented Black people. So for me, the gap is just bringing these people to the fore, which makes me so proud to be a Black woman in science.
Well, we are so proud to have you here as a guest, Shalom. It's just been wonderful. It is true that the best antidote to fear is knowledge. And that knowledge is power. And absolutely. I wasn't aware, but now I am, as to how much of EMQT's core value proposition is this knowledge sharing and that being the key to unlocking this vast opportunity. So thank you so much for the work that you do in so many spheres with such boundless energy and for sharing these insights here on the Science Arena with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.